God. Sorry.
You're like, what if I start this with a fucking opa?
With a broken soundboard.
Here we go. Oh yeah, right over the soundboard. Didn't think that one through, did we? Do we think anything through? No.
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 Nope.
Just my ulterior motives.
Yep.
Exactly.
What?
No.
Nope. Fuck.
What?
Welcome back to Gumshoe Weekly. It's your line.
The epicenter for murder, mystery, and mayhem. You guessed it.
It'd be fun if every last word, like every time you say murder, mystery, you always change the last word. Murder, mystery, divorce.
Murder, mystery, divorce. Kids, it's time. We all knew we were coming towards this.
Yep. And we're bringing you here, and it's not your fault.
It's not your fault, but maybe it was. Think about what just you've done bit. For
you're
me.
A terrible little shit.
You're terrible, and you won't stop pooping your pants.
I'm your host, Brianna.
And I'm your host, Jebediah.
Yep. Jebediah's back, guys.
Jebediah's back. I came back for the special 50th episode. You know.
50 years old.
50? Anyways, none of this has been usable. Let's go on. What's your question?
What is your favorite smell?
Oh. Mm. Can you go first?
I really like the smell of gas. Uh-huh. Which is, it's pretty common. I like the smell of matches when you blow them out. Huh. That's a good one.
You're very poetic with your smells.
I also like the basic bitch smells too, like vanilla and clean linen.
Oh, I don't like the vanilla smell. I love it. I do like clean linen.
I like comfy smells. So like pumpkin is a good smell. Mm-hmm. Like cozy smells. I'm not a floral smell kind of person.
I don't like floral. No, I don't like floral smells. There's another kind of smell I don't like. I don't like food smells, but on people.
Like if somebody smells like a cheeseburger?
If it's like, oh, I use,
cheeseburger.
Snickerdoodle perfume, and I'm like, that's gross. Like, they're like, oh, I smell like,
cookies?
Cupcakes, and I'm like, you smell like burnt sugar. That's your smell. I just, like, it's, like, super sweet smells like that, like, kind of gross me out. Mm-hmm. I was just gonna say, like, I really like the smell of men's deodorant.
Men's deodorant is a good one.
I like the smell of the love of my life. I think it's Dior. I think that's the perfume for men he used.
Oh, God.
men's deodorant, laundry, that kind of thing.
I love the smell of clean laundry. Mm-hmm. You would think I'd clean my laundry more.
I did my laundry at Kylie's house the other day and was like, this laundry smells like someone's mom did it. Because I used, like, one of her ingredients. And I was like, wow, this is really the key to get it to smell like a mom's laundry. Mom's deodorant.
Mom's gross.
What kind of deodorant do moms wear?
I feel like the same deodorant.
You don't know what kind of deodorant your mom wears?
No. I'm not like, what do you got there? What are you putting on? Armpit.
My dad uses... He doesn't use it anymore, but cut that out. He uses the baby powder smelling one, and it literally says the scent is baby powder. It's powder. It's just powder scented. Which powder, you may be wondering?
Foot powder.
No idea. It literally smells like flour in the air somehow.
Well, you used to buy your dad's shit. I never bought my mom's
That's true.
Shit, so I wouldn't know.
He also uses Delson Blue Shampoo.
Wow, very specific.
The blue one, though. There are others.
The iceberg one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do men's fucking, like,
right?
Scents
okay.
always,
yeah.
like, fucking man or, like, forest.
Forest.
Ocean's tide or some shit like that.
It's always an adjective. Strength. Power. Yeah. this Lili Reinhart had said that her grandma once bought her dad some, and it was like it was like washboard abs or something.
It was the scent. He has a dad bod.
Yeah. And it was his mom buying it for him, so. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I drank wine now. I'm tired.
I took some fucking Benadryl.
It's gonna get real crazy.
I'm ready to just.
Here.
You're gonna hear the noise of my head hitting the microphone as I'm like. That was only 5 minutes, so we have to talk about some more. I'll cut this part out though. That did remind me. The Lili Reinhart though thing did remind me that this is not related. This stupid person on the internet had like taken a bunch of footage of Dylan and Cole Sprouse,
who are very hot now,
layered it over each other, like similar scenes where they're doing the exact same thing, and they were like, wow, the Sprouse's parents really said copy and paste. And it's like, they're fucking twins.
They're twins, you idiot.
They're twins, you stupid bitch. God, I want to punch you in the throat through the internet.
What an idiot.
Yeah. Copy and paste. Yeah, that's literally what it is. They're the same fucking genetic makeup. Stupid ass. Dumbass. You don't understand fucking bitch science, you whore.
I think it's okay if it's only 5 minutes, because thing is going to be really long, I feel like.
That's true. Well, we say that now. We don't actually know.
Ugh. It's going to be like 10 minutes.
Yeah, we're going to be like, fuck. How do we reenacted an entire movie, but in 1/5 of the time it took them to actually play the movie. All right, I guess let's fucking fuck. Let's fuck. Well, so this is our 50th episode, and you know, you hoes know what that means, do you?
It's a special one.
It's special. That's
special
what it means.
Special for you, you dumb hoe.
If you want to have the full background on what we're about to cover, you should go to
You should
Netflix.
Pause your ass right now.
Pause it.
Pause
we're
your
gonna
ass.
Ruin it. Pause your ass.
And take your ass on over to Netflix.
Stop farting and sit on the TV. As I say TV. Sit on the couch.
Ask your friend for their Netflix information. If you don't have a Netflix account now, I don't know what to tell you.
You're poor. Like, this episode isn't for you.
We've managed to call them dumb hoes. Stupid bitches.
Poor.
And poor.
I told them to not listen. I don't know anyone.
Well, we're sorry.
I don't know. We're sorry. It's only going to get worse. Yep. Just kidding. That was probably the meanest we'll get to you this episode.
I mean, we're almost done with our wine glasses.
We get
realtor.
It's been a while since we've had wine while recording, and we get really confrontational, and we're sorry. We're usually very sweet when we drink.
Yep.
Well, I am, and then Brianna kind of just matches the energy, so we both are very sweet. Anyways, I don't know anyone without a Netflix account is my only point.
Okay, so if you don't have a Netflix account, steal somebody's Netflix account.
You can
account.
Use ours.
You know what you can do? You can get that 30-month,
30-month free trial.
30-day free trial. You can get that 30-day free trial and watch this documentary that we watched.
It was called Amanda Knox.
Amanda Knox. It's 1 hour and 32 minutes. It was made in 2016 by Brian McGinn. It's pretty good. You should watch it.
It's literally called Amanda Knox.
It's called Amanda Knox. Not hard to miss. And that's what we're going to be talking about this fine night day.
We're going to cover it. We're going to get inside of it. We're going to have a special guest.
Amanda Knox.
Amanda Knox. Come out, Amanda. Just kidding. She's not here. For a second, I was like, is either of us going to try to do her voice that I can't remember? Let's start this by giving you guys a lowdown on what happened.
The 411.
The 412, because it's got a little bit more information than you would expect.
Do you want to do that again? Because I'm over here touching the shit out of my mic.
The 412, because it's got a little bit more information than you'd expect.
It has the cliff notes.
I went fully radio host on that take. So.
Alrighty. Do you want me to get into it, or you want to get into it?
I feel like you can get into it.
I'm going to tell it to you like I tell you Black Mirror episodes.
Yes.
Alrighty.
Yes. Please, God. And then afterwards, let's just record our other podcast, Black Mirrors. Black Mirrors. That's what it's called. Because yep. That's how she says the name of Black Mirrors. Black Mirrors.
Okay. So, the story starts on November 2nd, 2007. Police respond to a call in Perugia, Italy. The call was made by a man, and he was talking about how there was a break-in in this house. He made a call saying that there was a break-in, the house was a mess, and one of the roommates' doors was locked. They couldn't get into it. They needed somebody to come and check out, make sure it was okay. So the police respond. They come to the house, and they notice that the glass is broken, there's stuff all over the house.
Should you mention who was there?
I'm going to get to it.
Sorry. They turn their head, they see them sitting there, they're like...
So the police respond to the call, they get to the house, the door's opened, and it's two people standing there. It's Rafael Solicito?
Solicito.
And Amanda Knox. Oh my god. Amanda Knox. They see that there's glass all over the floor, that a lot of the stuff is, like, thrown about the house. It almost looks like a break-in, right? So they tell them, we can't open the door with you guys in the house. This is something I heard from another thing. Mm-hmm. We can't open the door with you guys in the house. So they kick them out the house, Amanda Knox and Rafael Solicito, which they are dating. That's boyfriend and girlfriend.
And it's Amanda's house.
And it's, yes, it is Amanda's house. She's renting it. She is she's an exchange student from Seattle. Also, yeah, like I said, the year's 2007. She's from Seattle, Washington, and she's an exchange student. They kick them out of the house, and they go and break down the door to one of the roommates' rooms. It's three roommates. Amanda Knox, there was three of them. Girl.
I had no idea.
Yeah, there's another roommate.
What was their name?
Something with a C, Catherine, maybe?
Why weren't they implicated?
They were out of town completely. They were nowhere near. One of the roommates' rooms is locked. They go to try and break it down. It's the roommate. Her name is Meredith...
Kircher.
Yeah, Meredith Kircher. They break down the door, and instantly it's a horror scene. There's stuff thrown all over the place. They look down, and there is a foot sticking out of a blanket. It looks like somebody threw a quilt over a body, essentially. There's blood streaks on the wall with fingerprints in it, and underneath the blanket is Meredith Kircher. Kircher.
Was she naked?
Her clothes were torn.
Oh.
So she didn't have a bra on. She was, they described her as, they mostly described her as, like, indecent, but, like, to me that means, like, her clothes are ripped.
Partially nude.
Partially nude is what they described her as. So she's partially nude. She's hidden under this blanket next to the bed. There's blood on the floor. There's glass everywhere. It really looked like a home invasion. So, immediately the house has surrounded by cops. The lead prosecutor is Giuliano Migni. Migni. Again, could have been writing this really fast.
I would just say Migni, I guess.
Okay, so the lead prosecutor is Giuliano. Nope.
Giuliano.
The lead prosecutor is Giuliano. He comes in, and his first instinct... Okay, so the first thing he addresses is Amanda Knox and Rafael. The way that they are acting during this...
As they wait outside during the investigation.
In the movie, you can see them. They're standing outside. Doesn't really look like anything crazy is happening. They're kind of being intimate with each other, kissing each other, hugging each other. And some instantly saw this as suspicious. The behavior is seen as suspicious. And this is kind of where...
Inappropriate.
And inappropriate. And this is kind of where it really blows up and it takes a whole nother... It starts to grow, like, it grows limbs. You know what I mean? This whole thing, the way they're acting and the way that the police see them acting is what a lot of people have the problem, like, what a lot of people see as inappropriate, and they're not reacting to finding a body in their house of somebody they knew appropriately. Mm-hmm. And that's where...
But they didn't know yet, did they?
They didn't know. I did listen to another podcast with Amanda on it, and when they broke down the door, it was just a lot of yelling in Italian, and she wasn't really catching what anybody was saying. Mm-hmm. And she had Raphael translate it to her, pretty much that there was a body.
Because she had said when they come over to, like, question her for her whereabouts, that was when she was hearing.
Yeah.
That she was, they mm-hmm. were like... She is dead, and she was like...
Yeah, so the first time she's hearing about it is when they, yeah, like you just said, mm-hmm. when they,
Come to question her.
So, that is the background of the story so far, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to kind of break it down to you what happened over 8 years of this story being so big. And I'm sure it happened in 2007. A lot of us were pretty young. I was not paying attention to anything going on outside of my life.
The name was familiar to me, but none of the other stuff
was. I definitely didn't know. I know the name. I feel like everybody knows the name. But I never knew what anything, like, the story at all. No details. Didn't know there was a killer. mm-hmm. Or not. Maybe. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll kind of break it down so you guys can kind of make that opinion yourself.
Ugh. So, one of their first moves in the investigation was... They bring in the, like, scene of crime officers, the forensic people, but they say that, so, it's Meredith Kircher there on the ground. She is covered by a blanket. It appears that she was violently held down by her arms. She has a deep throat wound. I think they said she was covered in blood, right?
Yeah.
When they go to do the autopsy, they do notice sexual interference with the body. And with further inspection, they find that there is male DNA inside of her. They also notice that there are little nicks on her chin, which they thought indicated torture, which then turned into the...
they instantly made it a news line.
It was a group crime sex game.
Mm-hmm. That was the police's decision from everything that they had found. A half-naked lady. There.
Yeah. All the stuff that we said, that's what they took from it.
Just a little background on Meredith as well. She was a 22-year-old English student, also studying abroad from England. Just so you know.
Did it to yourself again?
Yeah.
It's always kind of fun because I can see the defeat in your face every time you realize you've done it. You're always like, from... England.
Every fucking time. All right.
So as there are three roommates. So you said that, I mean, I'm not going to say you said that because I'm going to cut the part earlier when I'm like,
so there is a third roommate. I don't remember her name, but she was already out of town. So the story goes that Amanda, I guess we can get into...
Yeah, I was going to say that they're alibi. So,
yeah.
Being the people that live there, since they're responding to a call there, their two roommates that live with the person, and you know how they always go domestic first. Being that there are two roommates, right? So the immediate thought is, if it's not a spouse, it's a roommate. So the one roommate is out of town, so their immediate question, so combining the fact with she's the roommate, and also that they deemed her behavior is inappropriate already, one of the first people they question for an alibi would be Amanda Knox and Raphael. So, they are each other's alibi because she was at Raphael's apartment the night of the murder. They watched Amelie, they made dinner, they read German Harry Potter, and they talked in bed, had sex, and then passed out. The next morning, she walks home alone. She notices that the front door is already open, but that part doesn't was weird for me because she doesn't do anything about that. She comes inside, notices nobody's out in the common area, and nobody's in her room, so she goes to the bathroom. She goes to the bathroom, she strips down, she notices a few drops of blood in the bathroom, but doesn't think anything of it, like thinks maybe someone cut themselves. She brushes her teeth and showers, and as she's getting out of the shower, she sees on the bath mat that there is, like, a splotch of blood.
It looked like a bloody footprint.
Yeah, like a partial footprint. Yeah. But she assumes that somebody cut themselves.
Mm-hmm. And she thought that she connected that with the door, mm-hmm. saying, somebody cut themselves and ran in, not thinking to close the door.
Coming to the bathroom, yeah. So, that's all fine. She thinks it's just a cut, but then she notices that in the toilet, this was the worst part of it for me, and I feel like that really shows you my deep-seated issues. She sees feces. They show it, too.
They do.
And I saw it, and I was like, I literally convulsed, like, bodily. I looked like I was being exercised. I was like, oh. So, there is feces in the toilet, non-flushed, and also, there wasn't any toilet paper, I don't think. So, that was a whole thing.
Maybe that's why they got in the shower.
She sees feces in the toilet. That's what scares her. Because she's hit with the thought that maybe she's not alone in the house. So then she leaves to go get Raphael.
My thing is...
Yes.
How do you go into the bathroom and not immediately notice there's a shit in the toilet?
How do you go to get in the shower without peeing first?
I'm not gonna get into this. I'm not getting into this.
Don't you have to pee?
I'm not talking about this.
Okay, well.
But wouldn't you just, like, I'm walking to the shower. And the way that their bathroom was.
Yeah, the shower's at the end of the bathroom, right?
Yeah, you see the toilet on your way.
The poo-poo.
But also, don't you, like, close the toilet lid and put your towel on top or something? Like, don't you?
See, now you're getting specifically. Doesn't everyone put their towel on the toilet?
No, but I mean, how do you not notice that the first time you're on your way to the shower?
Well, that's like when people in movies walk into a room and in the corner is the killer just not moving. And they walk past them because they're not moving. And it's like, bitch, your peripherals don't work. Or
your third eye? Like, you don't sense that?
Even when I go into a room with someone standing perfectly still, like, against the wall, I still get me with a... Like, it gets me, though. Like, I see it.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
How didn't you make full-blown contact with that poop?
The thing is that she goes into her house, right? Goes in the common area. Goes into her room. The door had been open to the house, mm-hmm. and at no point is she like, who the fuck left the door open, or anything like that.
Yeah.
She comes in, the front door is fucking open already, and then she doesn't go in with the air of caution, because if I ever came to literally any house, I don't care whose house it is, and the door is, like, cracked, I'm walking in that bitch like I'm the police. Like, I'm, like...
I need to look under your bed,
room, I'm like, clear. Clear. If I came home and my door was open, I don't even think I would... Well, being me, I would go in. But normal people just won't, and they call someone else. They're like, come here. Mm. I might be murdered. Mm. Like...
Yeah. Okay.
That was suspicious.
Okay. Yeah, it took making eye contact with a poop to get you scared. I don't know.
Yeah, which also... That's just me. Same, though, because I would have been scared. If I just saw a loose
poop, but you live alone.
That's true. That was the worst. People who don't flush are satanic.
They're the worst.
Satanic.
I know.
You want me to look at this.
Even
you
if
pervert.
I pee a little bit, I'm like, I gotta flush this. Don't nobody gonna make eye contact with this yellow water.
I don't want you to look at my pee.
It's so weird. Anyway, you wanna go on?
I'm having a hard time.
You want
time.
Me to pick
Hold
up?
On.
I don't know you what.
Yeah, you say the call thing.
So Amanda's instantly creeped out. That's what makes her think, oh my god, I might not be alone in this house. She leaves immediately, goes back to Raphael's house, which wasn't very far. she tells him exactly what happened. He goes back to the house with her. No. She tells him what happens, explains the blood and the poop and all that good stuff. And
he had to mention again.
He's like, call your roommates, see what's going on, see if, you know, if they're home, if that was them or whatever. She calls her roommate. I don't remember her name. Sorry, guys. Calls her. No, she's out of town with her boyfriend. She's nowhere near the house. She keeps calling Meredith. Just keeps ringing. Nothing's happening. So they decide to go back to the house together. Once they get there, Raphael walks in and instantly notices that something is wrong.
Yes.
I don't understand how she walked in and didn't notice something was wrong instantly.
He described it in the film as a mess. He said that he walks in and just sees the mess everywhere. But that's immediately when he walks in the common area that she described as being normal.
But he also kind of mentioned that he thought it was, I'm pretty sure he thought, he mentioned that she thought, like, he thought it was weird that she didn't notice.
Ooh.
Yeah. The plot. So, they, like I said.
Oh, yes. He exactly said that he was surprised she took a shower without feeling the anxiety of the house.
Yes.
He was, English wasn't his first language, but I really like the words he used to describe certain things because I feel like they were very true.
Poetic. So just to give a little background about Raphael and Amanda, they had met at a classical music concert. The same night they made eye contact. It was real cute, real flirty. New American girl who's seen as beautiful there is noticing this guy who's just like an IT nerd, kind of basic he bitch was, there.
The pictures of him
back then
I was like, okay, and then the like in the film I was like,
all right, his glow up, like, was real.
You're like Italian handsome over here.
Yeah, he looked like a grown-up Harry Potter when he was in, during this time he looked like a grown-up Harry Potter that was blonde.
Yeah
very like nerdy. Anyway, so he noticed this beautiful American blonde girl, notices him. They instantly connect, and they had, you know, like a Italian romance kind of thing.
A summer romance.
Yeah.
It was like a fling, but like a Grease-level fling.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, I'll change my whole life for you right this minute.
Basically.
Just don't go back to Australia. Sandy! I watched Grease a lot as a kid.
Me too.
Yes.
So, first night, they hang out, they smoke pot, they have sex, and it's on like Donkey Kong. Mm-hmm. Since then.
They hang out every single day, every time she's not at work.
Yes. So, to give you a little bit of perspective, they had met a week before the murder. Mm-hmm. So they only knew each other for 5 days when Meredith was murdered.
Yes.
So.
And they both had described it as the first time they'd ever been in love.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I would be too if I was an exchange student.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, I met an Italian love, mm-hmm. and I'm going to live in Perugia now.
Yeah. So, it's hours until they actually call the police, and that is where our story began. Of the phone call was made by Raphael talking about a roommate's door was locked. They were concerned. It looks like a break-in, and that's where we will...
He had come to the house with her.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Left it at... He couldn't believe she took a shower without feeling the anxiety of the house. When she points out that Meredith's door is closed, he knocks on it. They both knock on it and no one answers. And then he tries to, like, kick it open. But he tries, I think he said 2 or 3 times, and he couldn't do it. And that's when they decide to call the police.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to kick in a door?
Yes.
I have not. Is it really that hard that they make it seem?
As a teenager, as a young, angry 12-year-old,
mm-hmm.
it's very hard.
I've punched doors before.
As an adult, like, as a spry young 20-year-old, I kicked a fucking hole through a door. But it also depends on what the door is made of. But if it's a bedroom door, like, unless it's, like, solid oak, then either the jamb or the door is going to break. In the instance, I was trying to break the door, and I sure as shit fucking did get my whole leg through that door. But a lot of bedroom doors aren't really made of anything solid. It could have been made from oak, but even that, like, the force of you kicking it should have, like, broken the door frame or the jamb. That's the thing, too. If you're only supposed to kick near the doorknob, and that's how cops do it, and it breaks that shit right in. Because it doesn't matter how strong the door is, that might work against the door jamb or the lock.
Interesting.
Break that bitch right in half. If you guys need to break into a house.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then.
The more you know. I feel like if people compile all of the knowledge I shouldn't have, I might go to jail. Just like they're like, you cannot stay free because you will strike. The next thing that I go into is Giuliani. What is his fucking name?
Jillian?
Jill Beans. So
the it's next, Jacoby.
Jacob. The next thing that he says was his.
Okay, wait.
His take on it. That was the next thing I have. The next part that they cover is Giuliani. We don't know though. Giuliano. So he's the lead investigator on the case. So they then show what his perspective of the scene is. So here are his thoughts on what they find. He believes that only a woman would cover the body of a
female victim
of a victim. So I thought that was a broad like streak to like take on it, because they always say that it's a sign of remorse, not that's a woman who did that. So usually it's a sign of remorse, like they did it and they regretted it, they didn't plan to do it, or they knew the person. That's usually what people associate with it. But his stance was only women who kill tend to cover the body.
And a man wouldn't think to do this.
A man would not think to do it. That was the other thing. So sexist on two parts. Against the women and the men's. So he also, his opinion on the break-in was that there was nothing stolen. There was no evidence that the wall was climbed. I don't know why the wall needs to be climbed. I don't know. Maybe they had a courtyard. They didn't say.
Well, the houses were very much so, they had, like, deep backyards.
Mm-hmm. Because
it's on the side of a mountain, it almost looked like.
Mm-hmm.
It was, picture, like, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. Very on the side of a mountain. Like, your yard was pretty much concrete. And the house was on the road. It was, like, a regular house. But if you looked over the balcony, like, not the balcony. If you looked into the yard of the house, it dropped straight down.
Yeah.
So somebody could very easily climb the wall if they wanted to get in, depending.
Or they could walk up.
Yeah.
That was interesting to me. They can only break in if they climb a wall.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, how did Amanda get there? She climbed the wall? So there was no evidence that the wall was climbed. Overall, he believed that the mess around the house, what is the fucking thing that they always call it? The, not kerfuffle, but the, the struggle. There were signs of a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
He said that it looked staged. And the only reason he could think of for you to stage a break-in would be to throw off suspicion of someone that has a connection to the house.
Mm-hmm. His first question was, why was the girl covered with a blanket? To also give a little bit of background on Giuliano, he was, first of all, super sexist in this fucking documentary. Yes. Let's just say that. Very biased, very sexist.
Mm-hmm.
When he was younger, his childhood home looked out onto the courtyard of one of Perugia's women prison. So he got to see these, like, Italy's most famous murderesses, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of already had something very set in his mind about.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, about women, or not about women, but about criminals who are women, I guess, to put it in a box more.
Mm-hmm.
And he took every investigation as, like, Sherlock Holmes. He looked up to Sherlock Holmes. I don't know if you remember him saying that, but he kind of tried to see what the evidence and what the crime scene story was telling him, as opposed to evidence. I mean,
not a bad
idea thing. Yeah,
but you need to be Sherlock Holmes if you're gonna act like Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is fucking infallible, except for when you think about that fucking post where they're like, every time I struggle to plug in my phone charger at the end of the night, I think about how Sherlock Holmes would classify me as an alcoholic if I have scratches around my charger hole. So, amazing show, though.
Mm-hmm. So just to give a little background about that guy.
That is a very good insight. I feel like that does color a certain few things.
So, now we really get the ball rolling. We're 2 days after the murder, and they realize that they notice the nicks on Meredith's chin, the nicks, and they classified that almost as like torture, and they were saying that it's a sex crime and they need to find that weapon to kind of really put some things into place. So they had Amanda come into the house. She was super chill until she got in the house, and they're like, we need to know in your kitchen what is missing. If there's a knife missing, let us know. So they bring in the house. There's a knife missing, right? The investigator, Giuliano, says that she immediately went into hysterics. She's hitting herself in the ears. He thought it was her blocking out the noise of screams or guilt. He was automatically like, she's guilty. Look at how she's acting. She's almost slapping the noise of her murder out of her ears.
Yeah, the way he said it was, he was like, she's blocking out the noise of Meredith screaming. And it's like, that is a very broad, again, assumption to take.
This immediately sent him on Amanda Knox's scent, trail, whatever you want to call it.
He's her trail, like, scent.
Her trail scent? That sounds disgusting.
It does.
Like, and her, like, happy trail scent. Ew! That's the first thing
you're
I thought
gross.
Of.
Gross! Brianna's over here being a smell pervert, as we all thought. And your first question was about smells, so...
They notice that they instantly go and start looking for the knife.
So, 3 days after, the next day after this freakout, which they are already on to her...
Scent. Not her happy trail scent. I like
trail more. So, they're onto her scent.
I'm reading Twilight. I think that's the problem.
Do they smell a happy trail in that book?
No, but smell is like a big thing because he can smell Bella because she's a human and she has
blood. I'm really into smells too, but I'm also really not into smells.
I'm into weird smells.
I'm into good smells. And I can't do bad smells. Can't.
I'm not going to get into it. Go on.
I don't want you to. I know where it was going, and I want you to not. I want you to seek Jesus. Instead of going to the gym tomorrow, let's go to church. Because you need it. Okay, so 3 days after the murder,
There's no top.
They wiretap Amanda and Raphael's phones.
The first phone call they get that gives them any sort of anything is a phone call.
Oh, I didn't write it down. I was like, it must be somewhere else in my notes. And then I'm looking and I'm like, there's literally nothing about that phone call. So good thing you chimed in.
The first phone call that kind of sets them again off on Amanda's trail is a phone call she has with a friend named Brett from back home. The phone call is super sus. She calls this girl and...
No, the girl calls her.
The girl calls her and there's almost no talk of this Meredith thing. There's no remorse in the phone call. It's pretty much Amanda being like, yeah, my life is really fucked up right now. Everything's crazy. And the friend is trying to deflect, kind of, and be like, well, you're in Italy and... It's super chill, and you have this amazing boyfriend named Raphael, who's Italian, and what? It was just so, it was really weird to me that, like, I don't know, I guess, yeah.
This is so funny, because I had the complete opposite reaction.
Really?
Because they saw this phone call is a damning phone call. Literally, the phone call was maybe 2 whole minutes long, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least the part that they included as their damning evidence. And I do want to highlight, to your note of this friend had been murdered, right? she had said in there, she was like, we were only friends for a few weeks. She was like, I liked her. I was shocked by what happened to her. But she was like, but we were only friends for a few weeks. She wasn't like my best friend. So it's funny that they thought it was suspicious, because my take on the phone call is they start talking. Brett's all like asking her about what she like, how, whatever. And then Amanda starts talking with her about it, but clearly Brett already knew what had happened because she didn't allude to why she was at the police's, and Brett knew about that already. But in the call, she even says, like, she had, I feel like she answered it, like, kind of, like, with a, like, a dour note, like, kind of, you know, not a lot of pep in her voice. She realizes it's Brett. She starts to be a little bit more friendly. And then she tells her what she had done that day, which was she went to the police and she was being questioned by them, and she said, and I was just so nervous and I just wanted to start crying. And she said that, and then they say, that's when Brett starts to try to change her mood. But I also saw that because I was like, Brett's not involved at all. So then I was like, this is kind of what I feel like a regular person who hasn't really seen like bad stuff, I feel like that's what they would do in the situation. They would try to distract you with like something small, like, oh, but you have a great boyfriend, and, like, the way that she's seeing it, too, because she's from back home, I think, feel like she's seeing it, like,
you have all these good things to look
well,
at.
Well, and she's like, next year you won't be there anymore, so it's literally, like, it's not going to matter the minute you move back. And
but I feel
head,
like it's, I don't know.
But they're teenagers. They're not, like, they're mentally
not
aware.
They're adults.
Were they in college? Oh, they're in their 20s. But that's,
I'm not expecting her to have, like, the teary-eyed confession or anything like that. I feel like she really just didn't have any sort of remorse. To me, it was more of a, oh, fuck, like, I don't know. I just didn't really like her reaction to, I think the phone call was weird.
Mm-hmm.
The girl wasn't really like, hey, how are you doing? Like, what's going on? Any updates? I feel like if something like that was going on with one of my friends, I'd be like, but right. Again, it's everybody reacts differently.
Right. Plus, you also have to think, like, you think this the call is suspect, but you think it's suspect on the other end. You know that girl didn't have anything to do with the murder. And it's like Amanda called her and was like, I killed someone. Let's pretend it didn't happen. She is handling it the only way that she thinks is the right way. And that's the part that you think is weird about it. Like, Amanda had, like, talked about it a little bit. And then the minute that this girl wanted to change the subject, she went with it.
Mm-hmm.
So she wasn't like, no, let's focus on the murder.
No.
So
yeah, I guess.
That's the thing. I don't know. Like, it was weird, but it was the other girl that was weird in the call. And Amanda had said, like, I was just so nervous, I wanted to start crying. And it sounded like, it didn't sound like a lie when she said that. Mm-hmm. So, wow, we had totally awesome. We had two totally different takes on that call. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's next? November 5th, the police bring in Raphael, and voluntarily, Amanda comes with him. Up until this point, I don't think she knows that she's a suspect, though.
Mm-hmm.
So she comes with him. They separate them, because they were only coming to question Raphael, and then they have Amanda wait in another room. So, essentially, Raphael sticks to his story, but they tell him that Amanda has been lying to him the whole time. And they call, I thought this was interesting, they call her a stupid slut and a cow.
Mm-hmm.
What do either of those have to do with murder?
Yeah, they got really rude and just super aggressive, started berating Amanda.
And
it was
very,
just weird.
Like, unprofessional.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to call her a stupid slut, and what are you basing this off of? Because you just know that she has a boyfriend. Like, you know literally nothing about her. You've known her for 3 days, and you called her a cow.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think they were really trying to break down Raphael's whole view of her.
Maybe they saw him as, like, really cherry, so they were like, this shouldn't be hard to twist this around. Like, maybe they got a really innocent vibe from him when they questioned him originally. So, Raphael even says in the documentary, he says that it was like reality twisted and became unclear.
Mm-hmm.
Which he even says, he's like, now I know that this was the truth. But he's like, but in this moment, reality twisted and became unclear. And he turns his back on her.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, he tells them that he was lying about the alibi. And he says, Amanda wasn't with me, and she didn't come back until 1 a.m.
So they became really interested in Amanda's whereabouts now that Raphael had changed his alibi for her. And they ended up taking her phone to kind of give them maybe some timestamps and stuff like that. And the first thing they thought as interesting was a text, because she told them originally, I got a text from my boss telling me I don't have to come into work tomorrow. And they looked at the text, and her boss was Patrick. So she got a text from her boss, Patrick Lumumba, telling her not to come into work. And she got this text while she was with Raphael. So she got super excited they could spend more time together, all that good stuff. This they used against her. They used it and they called it an appointment with the murderer.
Her text was in Italian, but it literally translated to, we will see each other later, have a good night. And mm-hmm. that's what they were saying was an appointment. Was mm-hmm. her saying, we'll see each other later, where they were like, you are saying you will see him later that night.
Yeah. At this point, they brought her in for questioning about this text. And they took it word for word, like you said. And they started hitting her and trying to get her to remember, hitting her in the back of the head, saying, remember, get your head straight in Italian, pretty much yelling at her, you know, very bad cop kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Which, right before they'd taken her phone, they told her that Raphael wasn't, that he told the truth, but it was a lie or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they went in and told her, Raphael told us what really happened. He told us you weren't there. So she hasn't been with him for hours. Here's that. And then they take her phone. And then now they're saying, you're not remembering. You're misremembering.
Mm-hmm. So after the head slaps and stuff like that, she said that she started getting flashes of visions in her head. That's the best way I can describe it. Of the street in front of Raphael's house. Another flash of the front door to her apartment. I think it was her apartment. Opening.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick in a brown leather jacket at the door. And Meredith screams. She said that it was me remembering that he killed her. So that instantly made her an accomplice, and they arrested all three of them. They arrested all three of them, and what are we calling him? Giuliano?
Giuliano.
Giuliano thought he used, again, hates fucking Amanda at this point, and says that she used this to divert attention from herself again.
Yes. Because they're all incarcerated. But after 3 weeks, Patrick provides an alibi, and he's let out.
Mm-hmm.
And Amanda, when he lets them out, Amanda says that she could tell that they'll never believe her again.
Mm-hmm.
When it's revealed that she lied about it.
Yeah.
I do think it's very interesting to see the kind of power shift that was implied with separating the two of them, right? And then questioning them and implying that there might be a little hole here and there, and once you start poking holes, then they can't fill out the story anymore. So then all of a sudden, these two who had the same story, and they both believed it, and it was both perfectly following them, just both changed their story.
Yeah.
In that moment.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, there is another character introduced into the documentary. His name is Nick Pisa. He is a journalist, and he really kind of dug himself into the investigation. He made really good with the lawyers that were working on the case and the prosecutors. And he was getting almost getting inside information, basically, at this point. He was mm-hmm. making really good with them. He knew a little bit of Italian, so they took a liking to him. And
he said it was because he was an English reporter.
Yeah. This was such a huge case because it involved an American girl that it blew up media coverage. Like,
mm-hmm.
it was on the newspaper front page every day. It was in the news almost every day. And they were calling it a girl-on-girl crime. They started to rip her apart, of course, as they always do. They went on her MySpace. They found
pictures of her with a machine gun. They put that on the front cover. They took pictures of Raphael dressed up as a mummy with a hatchet, put that on the front cover of newspapers. They were really building this story and really kind of changing the narrative to kind of fit, to sell papers.
Yeah. And it was what's hot, so you need to be saying something new every article, which is why they were getting so much information supplied to them by other sources. And it didn't matter what it was, they were publishing it. And it was so fucking funny when he said, what am I supposed to do? Check the credibility of everything that's given to me? The news will be over by then. And I was like, oh, girl.
It's true.
There's no integrity.
Nope. Okay. Which is, it was pretty funny. So from this online investigation into the life of these two people, the name Foxy Noxie was given to her by herself, basically.
It
was from her MySpace page. And they instantly went into, like, she's a man-eater. There was another one. She's a concertant of sex. She's a she-devil with an angel face. So the media had a fucking field day with this girl.
Notice that everything they say about her is either about sex or her looks.
Of course. Yeah.
Because she is a woman.
Woman. So, like we said, 3 weeks later, Patrick was able to provide an alibi. And Giano really, his first question to Amanda was, why'd you accuse him? Why'd you bring him down with you? She said, oh, I was stressed. I was scared. It was, you guys were holding me here for long hours.
You made me believe that it was him by saying that I was going to see him that night.
Yeah, they really stressed his name. What's his name, like that kind of thing. Like, really put him there. Mm-hmm. So Giano really made a point of her weakness was being questioned. He saw her as an anarchist. She had an attitude with authority.
That was fucking funny as shit to me.
Yeah, she was rebellious.
She's an anarchist. Yeah. It'd be like if he was like, she was a millennial. I had to get her.
Yeah. So, like we said, they're arrested. Uh-huh. They're in the...
Pokey?
Capone? Capone? What's the prison's name?
I don't know.
C-A-P-A-N-N-E.
Capini?
Capini. They have her now in the Capini jail.
Anyways, so fun stuff in jail.
Mm-hmm. Somebody gets a hold of her prison diary. One of the first people, Nick Pisa, was the one to get a hold of the diary. And in the diary, she explains how they told her after an exam that she has HIV and it's going to be full-blown AIDS soon. Mm-hmm. They really talked about... They pretty much set her up. They played mind games with her.
In a panic, she doesn't know what to do because now she's newly in prison and she thinks she has HIV or AIDS. So in her diary, she's trying to recollect, like, who have I had sex with? Who could have given it to me? So in the diary, she says, like, I had sex with this person. I know I used protection. I had sex with this person. I can't remember if I used protection. She lists 7 people she had sex with and the safeness of the sex.
Mm-hmm. In the newspaper, because they got a hold of this prison diary, they instantly called her perverted, pretty much called her a slut with many lovers and how she was infected. Again, turns out to be a manipulation and it's all lies. None of this is true.
And Nick Pisa did, and he did seem disappointed at that part when he was like, it turns out this was a tactic that the police were using to scare her. What the fuck kind of tactic is that going to give you? You're going to die of AIDS. What?
Yeah.
During this time, while they're all arrested, they conduct a house search on Raphael's house because they're still missing the murder weapon. And also, since he's in jail for it, they need to search his house. Which also, it's really funny that they arrested him without searching his house.
Yeah.
It's funny that that didn't happen until then. Usually there's a warrant and such things.
Well, it's in a different country. They have very different rules.
That's true. So,
In that country, or it seemed like they were very much, you're guilty until proven innocent. Mm-hmm. Whereas here it's completely different.
Which is, I think, something we've talked about before when we've done Italy, Italian. There was one where they said that there it's guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's, like, how it's supposed to be or just how it ends up being. So, they do a house search, and they find a drawer of kitchen knives. Crazy.
Almost like that's where they belong.
It's insane. Like, I just keep mine in the garden. So, they had found a knife that matched what they think caused the cuts. They didn't even say it matched. They said that it...
Characteristics.
It had possible similar characteristics to the knife that could have cut Meredith. So they test it, and they find damning evidence. Amanda's DNA is on the handle of the knife, and Meredith's DNA is on the blade. And even Amanda says, I have no explanation of why that is like that. Because I could get Amanda's... When they first were like, Amanda's DNA was on it, I was like, she just said she fucking cooked dinner there. Of course it's there. But Meredith's. So they also conduct another search on Amanda's house, the crime scene. And they happen... Wait, at this point it was 46 days after. Are we still on a regular timeline? Because it's... I know they said it at the same time, but I don't know if that's going to mess up. I'm just going to say it. So they research Amanda's house, and they find... the bra clasp from Meredith's bra, which had looked like it had been cut or ripped off of her. They find the bra clasp underneath a rug at the house, and they test that, and they find Raphael's DNA on the clasp.
Mm-hmm.
Around the same time, the police come forward and say that they have proof that Meredith was killed by three people. They start to look into the feces that was left in the toilet.
Think we forgot about that poop?
How dare you think that? We're going to bring it up at least four more times.
Mm-hmm.
Which, keep in mind, it is 46 days after the thing, but I guess now it's not super busy because they are in jail. So, they also find traces, vaginal traces, in her vaginal. I just did a Brianna. So they find vaginal traces to imply that they just tested it and it was Rudy's, right? I don't remember. It just has his name next to vaginal traces. They find vaginal traces and prints around the room that suggest that... A third person was there, who they quickly identify, because he has a record, as Rudy Herman Gede. So, do you have anything to add yet? I was going to go into Rudy.
Nope. My notes here talk about him as a sketchy person, but I'm sure you're going to get into that.
Oh, yeah. So, Rudy was in the system already for having a record for breaking and entering homes. But at the time where they identified that it was him... they also found out that he had fled the country already.
Mm-hmm. Just a little background on Rudy, though. Mm-hmm. He had kind of a hard growing up, but he had been taken in by one of Perugia's most prominent families.
Mm.
They were super well on money. Like, they pretty much raised him, but then there was a falling out.
Ooh.
That kind of caused him to turn into, like, a shady person. I don't know what the falling out was,
mm-hmm.
but it was that... it was pretty much that, like, they stopped talking to him and stuff like that and stopped being there for him. Mm-hmm. So that kind of pushed him into that direction of...
a life of crime.
Yeah.
Did they say that he had been, like, a peeping Tom or something? Or am I thinking of an entirely other thing?
I think a different thing.
I researched...
I feel like I would have put that down in my very extensive notes.
I fully researched, like, five stories before I picked the one that I did for the other one. So that's probably what I'm fucking thinking of. It's the only problem with doing two stories at once. So,
you should just fuck up like me next time.
Just not write a fucking story. Yeah. I should do that to you next week and just see, like, how it goes. Like, you'll be like, it was supposed to be two, and I'll be like, was it? And you'll be like, yes. So, they through a friend, are able to set up a Skype call to... What is it? They set up a Skype call to Rudy, but not really. They, like...
It's Rudy's friend, but they pay him off as an informant.
Bitch. And they said it was his best friend.
Yeah.
Snitch. So, he says to them, In the Skype call, I'll say what he says to the actual cops later. So in the Skype call, they're talking about it, and they're basically like, yeah, that's crazy. I feel a unibrow right here.
Girl.
They're like, yeah, that's crazy. Bye.
I have a unibrow all the fucking time. It's my life.
So he says they're basically agreeing how crazy it is that Meredith died. And he says, just one thing, Amanda had nothing to do with this. She wasn't there. Because he does admit to having been there. But, yeah, he says, just one thing, Amanda had nothing to do with this. She wasn't there. So, the police arrest Rudy. They set out an extradition.
An international warrant.
Anyway, so they arrest him. And he tells them that he met the girl the previous evening before the murder. And he went back to her house. They were going to hook up, but they had no condoms. So he goes to the bathroom. I assume doing the poo crime. So he goes to the bathroom, but while he's in there, I guess pooping at this girl's house that he had just met that evening, the level of confidence, you shouldn't have it.
Super chill.
That's too much.
It's chill.
So in the bathroom, he hears screaming. So he runs out. Without using toilet paper, we should all remember that, or flushing. He hears screaming. I have a lot of hang-ups about this. It's very gross. So he hears the screaming. He runs out of the room, and he sees a guy fleeing the house. The guy is covered in blood. No, the guy is fleeing the house. He sees Meredith on the ground. She's covered in blood, and he's like trying to help her, but she's... obviously dead. So he's scared and he thinks, I'm going to kill myself. We know that he does not kill himself because he flees the country.
Weird flex,
but okay. I'll kill myself or flee the country. Everyone ever always says that really quietly after they say they're going to kill themselves. Okay, but really quickly, what do you think about Rudy's story?
I just thought it was really weird that he just kept insisting that she wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And I guess because at this point I was like, this bitch did it.
You thought she did? Okay, yeah.
At this point. I mean, I don't know if it changes later on. We have to see.
I don't know either. I don't have a point in yet. I remember being like, okay, that's, like, sketchy.
I thought it was really weird that he kept insisting that she wasn't there.
I never felt like Raphael was involved in the beginning. When they arrest him, I was just like, that's weird, right? That they arrested him and not just her. The thing about Rudy insisting she wasn't involved, I felt like told me that he was innocent. Because if you're innocent and you have an easy out, why wouldn't you say,
that's a good point.
I saw Amanda there. Like, that, it doesn't make any sense to be trying to prove someone else's innocence while you're a murderer.
Yeah.
It should all be about... yeah, I was there. I saw Amanda. I freaked. I fucking dipped. Like, none of that was said. So to me, at this point of his story, I was like, I believe it. And I also fucking get why he left. Like, he's covered in blood. He's scared. And she's dead. You can't help her. And also, I don't know how it is in there, but if he was in America, if you're black, you need to flee. Because I feel like... for him, he would be like, this is like a fucking death sentence right here. I don't want to be involved in this. Mm-hmm. But I also don't know if Italy is racist like that. So, like our dear old home.
I definitely thought he was used as a scapegoat.
Yes. Oh, God. We're going to get into that. Okay. So, now we meet Walter Biscotti, which is Rudy's lawyer. So, he says that throughout the whole time, Rudy maintains his innocence. And he's like, you know, I also believe it, but, you know, as a lawyer, you need to a certain extent, like, you know, be honest with yourself. But he realizes the only hope that Rudy has, he's like, I'm glad the other two were arrested because the only hope that Rudy has is if he's being tried alone, and then he can't be blamed as the guilty person because he won't be tried at the same time as the other two. And he knew to guarantee that, he needed to fast track the case. Especially because he was definitely in the house. They have a bunch of traces of him in her room.
He is the third person they end up finding DNA all over the place for.
Yes, and they want to, and he thinks his only chance of being innocent, being proven innocent, is if he isn't going up against two other people. Mm-hmm. So, they start the trial, and Rudy, who up until now had insisted to his friend that Amanda wasn't there, he pleads not guilty, and in that, he says that he saw through the window, after coming out to seeing the Meredith, he saw through the window Amanda Knox's silhouette, and he knew it was for sure her. Still, though, they sentence him to 30 years, and then he ends up appealing, and he gets it down to 16 years.
So, the interesting thing to touch on with the Rudy thing is that the media, which had such a big hold on this case, there was little to no coverage about him. There was absolutely no interest in him being any sort of part of this. Yeah, they talked about him in the newspapers and stuff like that, but he wasn't getting front page news. He was getting a little article here and there. They really, really focused on Amanda Knox, Foxy Knoxy, being the main suspect.
And the only way that they could vilify all three of them was if they just lumped them together.
And made it seem
like a drug-fueled sex game.
Yep. The Foxy Knoxy cult.
Yes.
So, a year and a half after the murder, we pick up from the trial. So, a year and a half after the drug-fueled sex game and Foxy Knoxy cult, the trial begins. They think it's going to be an easy trial because everything is pointing to her, DNA, motive, and all that stuff. So investigators really paint a portrait. Really paint a picture.
They paint a portrait.
The Mona Lisa. In court, they really paint a picture of how Meredith and Amanda had completely opposite morals. Amanda is seen as this wild girl who likes to party and have crazy sex games and weird sex toys.
Aren't all the weird girls like that? It's always a sex cult.
Right? whereas Meredith was more reserved and she didn't have the same beliefs. And
God-loving, as we call it in America. Yeah. She was a church girl, so
them church girls are the worst. I don't care what nobody says.
Yeah.
So, they think that the night escalated when Meredith scolded Amanda about the visit of Rudy being there, because now they're painting Rudy as being a visitor of Amanda's, along with Raphael.
Implying that he was visiting, yes, for a threesome.
Yes.
They were going to do the Eiffel Tower.
they say, humiliated and irritated Amanda in front of her guests. They think that this is when Amanda convinced Rudy and Raphael to attack Meredith to appease her. Mm-hmm. Right?
And they said that at this point, they would do anything to make Amanda happy.
They quoted it as, pleasure at any cost was really the heart of the crime. Mm-hmm. Right? Easy. Bang, bang, boom. That's it, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not. The trial took...
Wait, you didn't say that they then thought that she stabbed her after that.
I didn't have that.
Oh, yeah, they... So that they held her, they held her down, and that Amanda just started stabbing her. Mm-hmm. But the interesting part of that whole story and recreation for me was that they say that she was just inviting them over, and then out of pocket, Meredith starts scolding her about her morals, right? So up until this point, none of it's premeditated. So then she's like, oh, hold her down, like, mm-hmm. start abusing her or whatever. And then she pulls out a knife and starts to stab her. A kitchen knife from her pocket.
A
kitchen knife from Raphael's house that she had brought with her to her home to do a threesome with.
I guess.
Why'd you need that knife? You have knives at your house. They proved she had knives at her house. So that's the part that tripped me up, because I was like, well, wait a minute. You're saying the murder weapon was at Raphael's house and that it was his knife. Mm-hmm. So why would she have brought that to her house and then unplanned stabbed her? I could get it if their story was they came there that night to kill her. Mm-hmm. But that's not what they're saying happened. So why is that knife there? It's wrong weapon. Wrong place.
Yeah.
So, go on.
I was going to get into 2 years later. Then no, them being charged.
Okay.
So, the trial takes 2 years before the courts can come up with a verdict. They believe that there's no doubt of guilt. Mm-hmm. And they are charged guilty.
I guess none of them think about the knife like I did. Because yeah. that was a little doubt.
I feel like, well, we get into this later.
Okay.
So, Amanda Knox is charged with guilty, a verdict of guilty, and she is charged with 26 years. Raphael is given 25 years with a verdict of guilty. I feel like this was the only... Okay, so again, I feel like everybody deals with things differently. Everybody's going to show emotions differently, like I keep saying. I guess this was the only part where she started to show remorse. This was, I feel like, the only part in the documentary where she had started to cry. And I feel like this was like 25 minutes in.
Yeah, when she realizes she won't see her younger siblings anymore.
Yeah, she's not going to see her family. She's going to grow. By the time she would get out, she'd be 50 years old, something like that, mm-hmm. right? So that's the first time she cries in the documentary, and this is like 25, 30 minutes in. Mm-hmm. Raphael is given 6 months in solitary confinement, and he just kept saying how, I feel like what kept him going was thinking about Amanda and their love, and how on her birthday he wanted to send her flowers, and how he still loved her. But Amanda did not reciprocate.
She pretty quickly shut it down.
Yeah. Keep in mind, they only knew each other at that point. Again, for 5 days.
I feel like I would have cannot stress that enough. More shit going on. One thing, though.
I've had periods that lasted longer.
On Brianna's note is, this was not only the first time in the documentary that she cries, because it's current and then the past. Footage from the past. But it's also the first time in the footage that she cries.
Yes.
Because I could get in the interviews not crying later on. Yeah. It's been like 15 years, like whatever, you know. But it's the first time in the documentary, in the recorded footage that she cries. Mm-hmm. That we see.
I should probably go into the fact of in the interview I'd listened to with Brian McGinnis on the You Can't Believe This or...
Hold on. Oh, it just popped my whole fucking hip out of place.
Ew.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't on the fucking recording. Literally, it hurts so bad. Legitimately. Legitimately.
On the podcast, You Can't Make This Up, they interview Brian McGinnis on the documentary that he made. And they had went to Amanda Knox the first time to say, hey, do you want to make this documentary? She refused at first. And then she came and found them and wanted to make the documentary.
Ooh.
And in this interview, he really talks about how they flew to Italy to film this with the police officers and stuff like that. And the dramatic scenes, it's Amanda Knox now. You see her. She's sitting there. She's telling you what's going on. You see the police officers. They tell you what's going on. You see Raphael. He tells you what's going on. Nick Pease is in it, all that good stuff. And fun fact, those really dramatic pauses in the movie, because there's a lot of those dramatic pauses. That is a camera trick that they do, because the person that they're really looking at is the director asking them questions. So it's not them sitting there dramatically waiting for you to judge them.
Uh-huh.
It's them sitting there getting questions from the director.
Uh-huh.
Same thing with the Italian officers. They were just getting the translations. That's why they had those long dramatic pauses in the fucking film.
Okay.
So yeah, you kind of see her now, and that was really the only time she started to cry during the whole film, was when she realized she was going to jail and she wasn't going to be able to see her family.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward, it's 3 years before they can make an appeal. The media goes fucking bananas for it. They decide that the DNA needs to be re-examined by an outside source because they feel that the first time that they went, the first crime scene was botched. The first investigation was botched by small town inexperienced detectives.
Wait, before you get very involved in that, right when, so there's a lot of media, they share clips of the media coverage during these times, and just to give you like a little other taste of like the overall outlook on it, this is that fucking tool bag douche lord Shep, whatever the fuck his name is, from the news says, when he sees Amanda for the first time in the appeal, because she pleads innocent.
Oh yeah, fucking quote. I didn't even bother.
Here's his take on the murderer. She's skinny, pale, and she could use hair and makeup.
Like she hasn't been sitting in jail for 3 years.
Yeah. He goes, I guess they don't have that in jail. And it's like, would you
not 3 years, a year.
Any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
About a man? Any of it. That's the thing. You're not being pretty enough to be a murderer right now for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You could be more entertaining if you were a little bit pretty. You couldn't put anything on, but then if she'd been wearing makeup, they're like, oh, she just thinks this is a perfect day in court. You're just coming to meet some men, huh? You little whore.
It was very much a like an attack against a woman. Like, it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't matter.
The whole time. And they don't say anything about Raphael at any fucking point.
Nope.
It's all about Amanda Foxy Noxy.
Yeah. So, they get this outside source to re-examine the first,
Crime scene.
I wrote first time scene. That's what I wrote here.
First time scene.
Which is where
they found all the DNA evidence that they saw as the damning evidence.
Which is the bra clasp, the,
knife.
The knife, the other male's, the other male DNA that they found. And they believe that the investigation was 100% botched because, I'm just saying everything over again. There was a lot of contamination. That was the main point of this appeal. There was so much contamination. They weren't using new gloves every time they touched new DNA. They weren't, detectives were just coming in and out, trampling the crime scene with their boots and not putting on booties. And a lot of people didn't have hazmats. Did you just say boobies? No, I said booties.
It sounded exactly like boobies.
No, they didn't put on their boobies.
So between collecting evidence, the thing is that they weren't speculating any of this. All of the whole investigation was filmed. Yeah. They used, like, body cams and, like, all the film that they got from it. And they just reviewed that. They didn't have to fucking do any, like, crazy legwork.
Nope.
That's how they found out they weren't changing their gloves. That's how they found out that a bunch of people were coming and going without PPE. They didn't have their boobies on. Got you that time.
So, Anderson Cooper had a really good quote about that.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much that if DNA evidence isn't credible, how did we get to this point?
Yeah.
The DNA was super objective. Like, they just...
They've been in jail at this point for over 2.5 years. Because it's 3 years from the murder.
Mm-hmm. So.
Did you
fucking...
Wanna...
Uh-huh.
Sorry, are you gonna say the... About how the clasp was under the rug 46 days?
No, because I feel like we spoke about that a lot.
Oh, okay. So, just, they overall believe that it was contaminated. Not only was the clasp found so late, They also had found DNA from two unknown men on the clasp, but never reported it. Mm-hmm. The police didn't report it.
Besides Raphael's, two other men.
Yes, besides Raphael's. When the lead investigator on the re-investigation on the DNA had spoken to, like, the lab consultants, they found out the lab was contaminated because there were, they find that the DNA on the knife was conclusive for Amanda. She definitely used it. She was like, it was such a good marking. Like, you could totally tell she used it. The Meredith one was so scarce. She was like, things this scarce, like, you can't just go with it. But when she questioned them, she was like, were you testing other things at the time? And she said, yeah, we can't close the lab down just because somebody died. And she had 50 other samples of Meredith Kircher's stuff there, testing it at the same time. So she found that as inconclusive. It was too scarce. And it was, in all likelihood, probably from her gloves, testing another thing, putting it on the knife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy. The Cheeto bitch.
Oh my god, shut up! can you see the all caps where I wrote the Cheeto? I wrote, news gets xenophobic unexpectedly, and then I wrote in all caps, the Cheeto! Because I had seen him right then. But it's because the news is all of a sudden like, well, you don't know how they do it over there with those Italians. And I'm like, oh my god.
Such an idiot. So, Cheeto Bitch Trump made an appearance in this, again, putting his fucking two cents. Actually
fucking recorded it, too.
Put his two cents in something he didn't need to. Put his two cents in pretty much that the president needs to get involved and go over there and figure it out. Pretty much taking the side of the blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl.
Oh, Aryan race.
I know. So, they really stressed European to American law. And they said how America focuses on DNA, whereas Europe focuses on seeing the bigger picture, including her behavior. Also, in the waiting room, she was acting real crazy, doing cartwheels, acting real funny on being a suspect. Like, girl, cut the fuck out. Anyway. So, Rudy's lawyer made a very funny comment about how, while we were still drawing buffaloes on caves, they were in the same exact courtroom that Amanda was getting put on trial in, was the same exact one that they were already making their laws. Europe, Italy was already making laws for their people while we were still in caves drawing buffaloes. It was funny to kind of see how they view us.
Yeah.
I get it.
Oh, I don't know if we told you guys, but there is no trace of Amanda or Raphael in the room, in Meredith's room, at all. But there was Rudy all over the room.
So after the appeal, it's 4 years later, they're still in jail. The court comes to the verdict of not guilty and demands that they be released immediately, which they are. And Italy is outraged. There's people outside screaming. The parents now living in Perugia for their daughter are outside. They're getting, like, pestered by media.
Oh, and I thought they brought her home to America.
Oh, she I'm over here home. In 3 years, not in four.
Oh, they live in Perugia.
Forget that. Cut all that out. Okay. They demand that they're released immediately, and they go home. Back to Seattle, Washington. And now she's living with this new identity, this newfound fame from this murder. And a really good point was made is kind of see what she does with this newfound fame. What does she do will determine her motives. Does she go and write a book and be done with it? Or does she start taking movie roles and doing interviews? Because then that will kind of tell you where her mind is at.
Mm-hmm. Are she trying to capitalize on it or not?
Yeah. Which I thought was pretty interesting. Like, one of the interviewers was outside of her father's house. And he's like, so, you know, like, the interviewer tells him, you know,
you gotta get on these interviews while you still can. She's a hot product. Hot property right now. What are you gonna do? And her dad's like,
he's like, the longer you wait, the more money you're losing. And the guy was like, in reference to what? And he goes, well, you know, she's hot property, and they're not gonna pay you as much if you wait a month. Mm-hmm. Do you know the direct thing the dad said? I loved it, so I wrote it down.
You can write it. You can say it.
Okay, so the dad is just looking, like, aghast at this guy. Like, he clearly had only gone out there because these people are literally on his front lawn. And he said, I'm not looking at her as hot property, as a hot property. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's my fucking daughter.
That's my fucking kid. Yeah. Like, he's not, he's totally not. Bitch. He's totally, bro, someone semi drove by earlier and honked, and I was sitting on my couch and I just fucking, like, it was loud as fuck and they, like, laid on it. Ugh. Anyways, but yeah, he's like, that's my kid, I'm not trying to just make money on her. I'm not doing, like,
not trying to,
he wasn't doing the Kris Jenner approach, the momager. Heard that show's canceled.
So, the media is still super crazy about her, still calling her a whore, still calling her sex obsessed, really stressing the fact that she had sex with 7 men. Yeah. Ridiculous. Who the fuck cares?
I remember when I had sex with 7 men.
20 men ago.
25 men ago. It's been a busy week. So, 6 years afterwards, the Italian court throws out the acquittal. They order their rearrests, and focusing mainly on circumstantial evidence. I mean, focusing entirely on circumstantial evidence, which would be Amanda's behavior and relationships.
They go through it again. They bring it now to the top appeals court, and then they are
found to be exonerated.
I thought you were going to yell it like you did in your notes.
Exonerated! I wrote an exclamation point, too. So, the court issues a statement on their decision. It was in 2015, right?
September 2015.
It's 2015 now. The court issues a statement. They say that they found... they explained why they exonerated them. They found stunning flaws in the investigation... stunning flaws in the investigation and the increased media attention created a frantic search for guilty parties. They found that there was also a complete lack of biological traces linking the two to the murder. They also said that they still believe the evidence points to Rudy.
Mm-hmm.
The only evidence they do have points to Rudy, I should say. Boom! Okay.
So they end the documentary with "Where are they now?" kind of thing. Nick Pisa is still a journalist, and that's where his fact checker. How about no? He didn't want to lose his scoop. He really believed in it. This trial by media, and that's really what this whole thing was about. He's still a writer. He's still a journalist. What's his name? Giuliano.
God, you fucked up me. Stop doing that. But also, it does seem like Nick doesn't... Like, it seems like Nick believes what the court believes.
He doesn't care.
He didn't believe that it was either of them, and also, he didn't care.
He really didn't care.
He did seem to have a little bit of shame about some things.
Yeah.
Like, the diary, he seemed shameful about.
Yeah.
The HIV, when he found out it was the police, he seemed upset about it.
Mm-hmm. In the interview that I listened with Brian McGinnis, he really talked about how Nick Pisa stressed that it's his job. It's, I'm gonna lose the story, I'm not gonna be able to feed my family, so I'm gonna make shit up. And that was kind of it. It was like, it doesn't matter if you turn out you have to turn out 100 articles a day to make ends meet. And that's what he really stressed, and that's why he was like, I know that I'm not fact-checking, and I don't care, because I need to know the latest scoop.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lose it to my competitor.
And he said he'd never had as many French front pages as he did during that time.
Yeah, which to him was like a thrill. Like a thrill, like a adrenaline rush.
Yeah, well, and I feel like it kind of proves, in that market at least, like, that's your, like, gut, like, that's your proof that you're a good writer is, well, I have the most front pages.
Yeah. And I think, like he said, we don't care about facts. We just want to know what's the latest new gossip. And it's true.
Well, and he was like, some people want to vilify me, but they're the same people who are Googling her every single day.
Yep. Giuliano. He definitely, you can see that he was on a bit of a high when he made that arrest and they were found guilty the first time.
Uh-huh.
And he really stressed how he, after, when they got, exonerated, how people kind of turned on him, the same people who were like, oh my god, you're a savior. They were calling him the devil and stuff like that. And how he
the
felt like
the only sentence he said in English the entire film was, you are evil.
Yeah. He really felt like he had to confess for a lot of things that he did wrong during the trial. And it still almost sounds like he believes that they're guilty.
Yeah, I feel like he didn't believe it at all. I think he was basically like, well, the court was wrong.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to say that because he was like very, well, I believe in justice and justice. Mm-hmm. And how can you say you believe in the justice system if you don't?
Yeah. So, I guess what we all really want to know is, do you believe that Amanda Knox killed her? Killed Meredith.
So many notebooks on the floor over here.
You threw them on the floor like it was fucking confetti.
Well, one of them was already there. I don't even remember throwing the second one, and I know I threw the third. I want to... Okay. So, in the very beginning, actually. In the very beginning of the film, she says...
Oh, I have that whole quote.
Oh, do you want to say it?
Okay.
This is her take on why everyone is so enthralled and always was so enthralled in her story.
Okay. There are those who believe in my guilt and those who believe in my innocence. There's no in between, and if I am guilty, it means that I am the ultimate figure to fear because I'm not the obvious one. But on the other hand, if I'm innocent, it means everyone's vulnerable and that's everyone's nightmare. Either I'm a psychopath in sheep's clothing, or I am you. Is that the quote you were talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
So I totally, like, I agree with what she was saying there, and I really like how she put it. And I think that that's also kind of going to color, like, our answers to what we think happened. But the thing is, if she did do it, then she got off literally purely by luck.
Mm-hmm.
She got off by somehow thinking, even though she presented herself to be very innocent and confused the whole time, she would have had to have some sort of inkling that these cops were somehow messing up in some way, or her lawyer would have had to have believed, like, oh, in the past they've messed up things, so I feel like if we push for the DNA to get thrown out, that's the only thing putting you there, so you'll be out. So, that's the only thing. However, Raphael still says that she was with him all night, even though in that one, which I don't even know what to make of them both changing their mind that one day and then changing it back eventually. I don't know if it was like a strategy or something, but the thing is that he, for one moment, said she wasn't there, and since then has said that she was there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, not to be crazy, but in the film, like, of the house that was taken when they did the search, they did have the German Harry Potter on the bedstand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was weed there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was her alibi. It does track. But the thing is, the only reason she got off was because the DNA was thrown out. So how would you know? How would you definitively know there is no DNA putting me in that room if you killed her?
Mm-hmm.
Especially because you obviously didn't clean because Rudy's is everywhere in there. So I also don't know if I believe it was Rudy.
Okay.
But when it comes down to it, I guess the only possibility of it having been her was if she had forced Rudy to do it, but also that would mean Raphael wasn't at all involved. Because Raphael's DNA would be everywhere just like Rudy's was. It's not like Raphael was in charge of anything. And then also, how do you coordinate that? You show up and start ordering this guy around. You find him on the way there. You're only gone for an hour or so, and then you come back. Like, it doesn't add up. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't think she did it, though. Only because, again, the DNA. Mm-hmm. How do you know for sure none of your DNA will be anywhere? Which, the way that they said it, they were like, even just, like, you running your hand over your shoulder, you don't even realize all the flakes of skin you're flicking off, and that's DNA right there. Mm-hmm. And there was just so much DNA for Rudy in that room. Which also could have been DNA for Rudy in that room if he just hung out with that girl. Mm-hmm. But he put himself there the night of the murder. That was interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know. His part is the part that confuses everything for me.
I could see that.
Where does he tie in? It doesn't make any sense. Why do you admit to being there the night of the murder? Why do you say Amanda definitely wasn't there and then he said that she was there? What does that mean? But I don't think it was her.
Okay.
Now tell me you.
I feel like she didn't directly kill Meredith, but I feel like she probably knows a little bit more than she's letting on. Whether she was in the house when Rudy was in the house and heard something, or I don't know if it's because, like, I'm getting influenced by the media, but I don't think that she was as innocent as she thinks she is. Or I just feel like she knows something a little bit more. I'm not expecting you to be, like, crying and anything like that, mm-hmm. but if you're in the waiting room of a fucking police station getting ready, doing cartwheels and making jokes when somebody you met is murdered, even if you weren't best friends, because how they met, she had gone to Perugia a month before she moved into the house. She was scouting out the place to go to college with her sister, mm-hmm. and she happened to see a lady putting up a sign with those little tabs at the bottom, to pull off the number to get the apartment. And the lady told her about the apartment. So when she went to move in, Meredith had already been living there, which she found the apartment the same way. So they didn't know each other. It wasn't like, oh, we're meeting up and we're best friends. We met at college. Let's share this apartment. But I feel like I would be a little bit more, and I guess that's all like hearsay, like opinion based of, I feel like I wouldn't be acting the way she was acting, but it's easy to say that. You know, I don't know if that makes sense.
I think I would act exactly how she was, to the point where I think my lawyers would have to tell me I needed to fake cry a little bit more. I wouldn't be doing fucking cartwheels, and I wouldn't be smiling in court as much as she was, because in every clip they showed, she was smiling in court.
Like, almost also, like, hey, I'm here now. Like, to me, that's not cool.
I feel like I would be, like, upset. But I'm not one to cry in that kind of instance. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, not cry so much. It's just be a little bit more.
I would be, like, somber. But the thing is, like, I would, at the end of the day, be like, I'm very upset about her being dead. I'm also very upset that it seems like you're going to arrest me about it. Mm-hmm. Like, that, I don't know where it would. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that would upset me more than this person I didn't know that well, is if I was like, I have an alibi, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I don't have a fucking alibi because he just said I was fucking lying. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing. Like, I don't think that I would be, because they only knew each other for a few months. Also, you have to think about it. She went there and she didn't even, like, check in on her at the house. So, saying she didn't murder her, you didn't check on her? Like, you guys, like, don't hang out? Which none of the things said, oh, that we hung out all the time. She was like, yeah, we were, like, friends. But it's like, are you friends in the roommate way where you're friends?
Sorry, one thing I just thought of. Door was locked from the inside. The door was locked from the inside, and
They didn't say there was a key or anything.
No, they had to break the door down, essentially.
So how the fuck? I mean, I know there was. Was there a window in the room?
There was. I don't know
if it was broken. No, there wasn't. Because he said he saw through the window, but it was through the front window because he was coming out of the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So he could see into her room, but he could also see out of the front.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So how'd that person get out? Probably through a window, but
where was the window located? Like we said, the garden is very low to the ground. I don't know where the bedroom was located. But that's just something that just popped into my head of, hold up, the door was locked from the inside?
Yeah.
How did the person get out?
Yeah.
Are you checking that kind of stuff? Like,
did you check for prints on the windowsill? Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. But
But I'm pretty sure there was windows in her bedroom.
That's the only way they could have got out, unless they had a key and they didn't imply that there was a key anywhere.
Yeah.
So, that's fucking
just interesting. And I also don't know, maybe my opinion is more swayed by the media. That can be the case, too. I just feel like maybe she heard something and didn't realize it or thought not to think. Something like
it's
that.
It's possible, too. Like, I feel like it's very possible that, because you notice her lawyers didn't get interviewed? Only Rudy's. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if Rudy's only got interviewed because Rudy...
Well, they did say that they tried to get a couple of different people to agree to do it. Like, Rudy at that point, I believe, was not, he wasn't out of jail. But they tried to interview Rudy later on, and he was not down for it.
That's fair. I've been in jail for, like, 20 fucking years.
Any sort of quote, I feel like they couldn't get from him.
Yeah. But they didn't interview her lawyers.
Yeah.
But, so I think it's possible that... she knew something and they were just like, I'm going to need you to never say that again.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe she was like, well, I know it couldn't have been this because of this. And then they'd be like,
shut the fuck up.
Don't know that. Don't know anything. Stop it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like everything she knew was damning enough that they, I feel like it might have been a wrong place, wrong time. Like, yeah, it was fucking weird of you to shower in there, but I don't know your fucking situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've all had a lot of roommates. Like,
and there was two different bathrooms. Remember, there was two bathrooms. Now that I think about it, there wasn't. There was the bathroom that she took the shower in with the blood on the mat, and then the bathroom that she dried her hair in that had the shit in the toilet.
That was a different bathroom?
I'm pretty sure there was. Because she said, that was an interview that I listened to, not the fucking DVD, not the movie.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
So she went to a different bathroom to dry her hair.
She went to a different bathroom to dry her hair, and that's when she noticed the poop. I just feel like there's something there.
The thing is that also his story was kind of believable.
Yeah. And then a lot of Raphael's
was... when he starts to change the thing about Amanda, that's when I got suspicious. Mm-hmm. But I was like, maybe they're trying to implicate her so he looks better. Because they already have her in jail. So what's the pain? Like, what hurts?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's gonna hurt that.
Yeah. Makes sense.
But I don't know. I didn't believe the her thing because also, like... she straight up was like, yeah, I'm not interested in Raphael. And Raphael is still, to this day, proving her alibi. And he's doing it in such a, like, humble way that I feel like...
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to cite my sources real quick. I got my outside information from the podcast Wrongfully Convicted, and You Can't Make This Up, which is a Netflix podcast.
I got mine from Netflix.
Good shit.
And that's it.
Yep.
Was and there... what about it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just persuaded by the...
But then what do you do about Raphael? You think he was in on it?
It still seems like he was just hard on her. Like, even the way he was talking about her in the documentary was like there was still something there. And she's married now. So...
Yeah, that I don't think. I think they had a trauma bond. That's probably why. But also, I don't think he would still be maintaining the lie.
Why not? Because if he's still in love with her and still has feelings for her.
She's fucking married.
So what? What does
why
that mean?
Would you, well, why would you lie for someone any, like that's married? Like,
you can still love somebody if they're married.
Oh, girl, don't I know it.
Well, there you go.
I'm just saying, I don't know. It just, I don't know. He seemed so... Well, and he's like a consultant now for true crime things.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And she has a podcast, too.
It's called If I Did It, the fucking O.J. Simpson book sequel. If I Did It. I'm not saying I did, but if I did it, here's exactly how I would fucking do it. Okay, you just said some things that not everyone knows. Well, that was a coincidence. Just telling you what I would do.
This is me guessing.
This is me guessing. It's spot on. You know I'm a crime fan. Well, okay, so you think she did it, I think she didn't do it. Great. We're just like Giuliano and Nick. Except I get to be Nick and you're Giuliano, so sorry about that. Sorry that that's your dad now. You're that big sad guy, as she described him. He seemed a very big man, and he seemed very sad. I think she seemed hardened later on, but it was like, literally, what do you, everything that happened to you was based on how people perceived your emotions. So I would never show people my emotions again. Mm-hmm. Fuck no. So thanks for joining us on our 50th episode.
You know what you guys should do for our 50th episode?
Birthday.
50th episode birthday. It is almost our podcast birthday. September 26th is when we went up.
Wow.
So.
Can't wait to go to Olive Garden for that.
Right? Do we just do that instead of the gym? Olive Garden
instead
breakfast?
Instead of the what?
I said instead of the gym.
Oh, yeah. Instead of going to the gym, I had pasta for breakfast. Mm-hmm. And wine. And we had to get dessert because we're at Olive Garden.
You never get it.
And we also got an appetizer. We knew we wouldn't finish our food if we did, but yeah. We did it anyway.
Anyway, you guys don't know what you should do for listening to us for 50 whole episodes. Go follow us on Instagram and promote us.
Please tell your friends, tell your family, tell your dog.
Mm-hmm. Just put those headphones on that little guy.
He'll love it.
He'll love it. Just make sure you do that and you tell him, this is the 50th episode. It was really good. Here you go.
It was really good. Listen. And he'll go, oh, I've been meaning to watch that documentary. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have to now. Because mm-hmm. we're going to tell him.
Yep. Word for word.
Word for word. So if you need to follow our Instagram and you're a dog, you can go to... Well, if you need to follow our Instagram and our Twitter and you're a dog, I couldn't think of a way to add Twitter into the sentence after. Then you can go to...
Gumshoe Weekly.
And our Facebook is...
Gumshoe Pod.
And if you want to email us any insider info you have on this case, whodunit, or any suggestions on what you think we should cover next, you can email us at...
Gumshoeweekly@gmail.com.
Bye!